Agree on this? So, what connects what Jesus reveals to what we get to experience on a daily basis? What connects the two? What Jesus promises to have accomplished and what we live in and enjoy on a daily basis. What connects those two things? What brings them together? Is there something that God requires of us in order for us to enjoy that in our everyday life? Is there something that we need to do? Is there some role that we play in this? Right? Because you have this lofty promises, good news. And it's said to be available in Jesus. But then how do we get it into the places we need it most? How do we get it into our mess? How do we get it into our homes and into our marriages? How do we get all of that even into our finances? How do we get that into everyday life? Does that seem like a good question? I think in some ways it's the biggest question, isn't it? Once we've established that God has good news for us and it is available, that's a pretty important question for us. Now in John chapter 6, the one we've looked at today, there's this whole story behind it that we don't have time for, but this particular story comes after Jesus has done one of the big events where he feeds thousands of people, miraculously provides for them bread and fish and feeds them, okay? And because of this, this crowd is searching for Jesus. Jesus has become this roaming food court, I guess, to them. This idea that if we just find Jesus, we're going to get fed again. Okay? So they've been searching for him, and then they finally come across him, and they find him. And Jesus says to them, look, you're coming after me, not because you're looking for salvation to humanity's biggest problems. You're coming because you want another meal, another freebie. And so he kind of challenges and pushes back on them a little bit. But then they respond with this question that I love. Because when I read it, I thought, this is my big question. And their question to Jesus is this: what must we do to be doing the works of God? Basically, Jesus has said, the good news here is that I'm not just going to fill your belly with bread. I'm going to give you the very bread of life. Okay, so that's the two things: the promise, the good news of the gospel, and its availability in Jesus. Their natural response to that then is, well, how do we get that? Right, just like us. How do I get that? What is it that God wants from us? And then Jesus answers the question, and it's not in a parable, which I really appreciate. You ever find with Jesus' parables, you're like, man, you're bending my mind. Which I love about Jesus, because he doesn't always give it to you straight. He makes you think. He makes you wrestle with it. But here, we get a very straightforward answer from Jesus. So what must we do to be doing the works of God? This is the big question for our church. And we should always be coming back to it. What does God require of Christ Church Oceanside? And here's Jesus' answer. This is the work of God, that you believe in him whom he has sent. This is the fundamental Christian responsibility, which is going to test us a little bit. Because the responsibility here is this: your only job in the Christian life is to believe in the one that he sent for you. Is to believe in Jesus. That is your only job, is to believe in Jesus. Now, that should feel like more good news. Does it? It does. It's like, oh, okay. It's nice to know where I stand, what you expect of me. You ever worked a job where you're like, the expectations aren't clear? And you just live in a constant state of fear of like, I don't know if I'm doing it right. I don't know if I'm doing it wrong. I just wish it was laid out perfectly for me what I'm supposed to do. Anyone been there? Maybe that's marriage. Anyway, let's move on. I'm just kidding. Okay, so Jesus lays it out. The only thing I require of you is that you believe in the one that was sent for you, to believe in Jesus. This is why the Apostles' Creed begins with what? I believe. I believe. That's our public statement every week. Everything that follows in the creed is predicated on that first line. We believe the following about the person and work of Jesus. So that's pretty important. We believe, and then this, and it goes on. Listing all of the things that are key and central and unchanging about the person and work of Jesus. That's the historic faith. But it brings us back still to that fundamental question. What does it mean then to believe? It's easy to say our job is to believe, but if I was to ask you, what does that mean? What does it mean to believe? You should wrestle with that for a second. Maybe another way to put it would be this. What's the definition of believing? Now, another word that we use for believe is faith. Right? So we use that word a lot. Faith. So what does it mean to have faith in Jesus? Because again, it's the bridge. We have to understand how to do it. What does faith mean? Now, our cultural understanding is one that faith, the definition of faith is understood as blind faith. You ever heard that? We heard of blind faith in our culture? And so kind of the running definition of that is that blind faith is to believe in something you have no proof for. It's invisible, intangible, theoretical, and kind of hopefully. It's kind of fairy tale-ish, right? That the idea is you believe in fairies even though you've never seen them. Or that definition is kind of applied to Christianity, isn't it? We believe in Jesus, though there isn't really a lot of proof, and who knows why they do it, and they just hope that someday when they die, it proves to be true. Is that the definition of biblical faith, though? Now think about the apostles. So the 12 apostles are those who walked most closely with Jesus. Right? Think of the crowds around that followed Jesus on a consistent basis. Think of the individuals that met Jesus who were in dire straits, right? Disease and affliction and sorrows. When they met Jesus, was it blind faith? It'd be kind of funny to read that back into the stories, wouldn't it? I mean, the blind people, fine. They count. But everybody, right, in this sense, are they really just trusting, hoping in an invisible being? No. It's quite the opposite, isn't it? For them, for Peter, for John, for all these different people, Mary Magdalene, it's real, it's tangible, and it's specific. It's not just general and kind of, you know, these weird allusions to something. It's very specific. It's personal. And not just personal for them, but it's belief in a specific person, isn't it? A person they could see and touch and hear and interact with. That the Jesus of the Bible is very much alive and present and working and doing things in the moment. The Christian belief is that that continues today. Jesus is a person who's alive, active, and involved in your day, in your present. So if we read through the gospel accounts, these eyewitness testimonies of being impacted by Jesus, we see people, especially the 12, wrestling with what they are seeing, hearing, and experiencing. It's really, it causes them to think, and he challenges them, and he pushes them a little bit. And as their stories unfold, we can almost see the apostles and the crowd around Jesus. They're trying to figure him out. They're going, I'm seeing him do things. That means he's not just a good teacher. He has miraculous power. And he doesn't just have miraculous power to heal people. He can speak to whole storms and make them stop. He can make the waves quiet down. He can make the wind stop. That's a pretty big deal, isn't it? At other points, they see Jesus transform into the fact that they don't just see a normal man. They now see him covered in God's glory. And prophets of old standing with him, Moses and Elijah, they're seeing a God person. And they're trying to understand that. All of this, they're seeing, and all the while Jesus is asking this question of them, who do you say that I am? Essentially saying, who do you think I am? He's putting the weight on them to wrestle with and make some conclusions, isn't he? They're not just watching him do amazing things, but he's also pushing them to go, but who am I to you? How are you understanding me? Because he's pushing them to the point that they need to come to conclusions where they go, not only am I seeing Jesus as amazing, but I am personally trusting in Jesus. I'm trusting who he is. That to believe is not just this blind faith where we go, I don't really see anything, but I hope he's out there. I hope he's doing good things, and hopefully he takes care of me once I'm dead. It's very thin. Instead, he's pushing them towards, can you trust in who I am? Can you trust in what I accomplish? Can you trust in me to be enough for you? That's what he's pushing the question in the apostles. That's why the reading that I had Richard do today, 1 John 4, John says, we have come to know Jesus. So we know what we saw, but to know and believe the love that God has for us. So it's this movement of going, I know we knew Jesus was the Savior, and we knew Jesus was God, and we knew Jesus was doing significant things, but we came from knowing to believing it. We knew it, and now we trust it. See that movement? Of going, we know the right things about Jesus, to we know we can trust in Jesus. That's the movement that we're looking for. We know what the promises are in Jesus, to now we know the impact of those things in our lives through trusting in Jesus. Because it's not enough to know about something or someone. It's not enough. We're not asking you. This is not a club where we memorize a textbook so that you can pass the multiple choice test and get into heaven. That is not what this is. That's not the goal of our gathering. Knowledge simply begins an internal wrestle where we go, what I have heard today, can I trust it? So when we teach from the scriptures, we're doing a mix of going, let's understand who Jesus is and what he's done, but then wrestle with it to the point of going, can I now trust in that for my life, for the particulars of what I'm struggling with? The combination of understanding and trusting is what believing is. Does that make sense? That's that point of decision in a lot of ways. I hear that Jesus is the creator, which means then I trust that I was made by him from love. That's who I am. Those types of, they're kind of gospel equations. And if I'm created and loved by him, then that means this is how I live my life. Now, Dr. Packard, one of my favorites, most influential men, he defines faith as trustful, committed reliance. Let me say it again. Trustful, committed reliance. That's what it means to believe in Jesus. To trust in him, to commit to ongoing trust in Him and reliant trust in Him, relying on Him for every day and for every moment. To believe in the one God has sent means that we put all of our trust into God's only means of salvation, only way of provision, only source of life and goodness and hope for tomorrow. And to commit to continuing to do that. Jesus plus trust equals miraculous salvation. Do you hear me? Jesus plus trusting in Jesus equals miraculous transformation, change, and impact in today and ongoing for eternity. That's the good news of Jesus. Jesus available in the present for your current circumstances and struggles and situations through trust. Trust really becomes, we're hearing the gospel. Trust means I hear it enough to receive it, to trust it for my current situation, to trust it for my right now struggle, my right now pain, my right now weariness, my right now fears. And so you'll notice, for those of you that are participating in the small group discussions, I'm really pushing you towards answering the question, where is He now for the now? Not because we're going to get to the eternity stuff, but I'm going to push you to go, what about now? Are you trusting in Him now? Because that equals life-altering impact, fulfillment and joy in the present, provision and peace for your current storms. That's the Jesus we believe in. Not theoretical for the future, but present and available. That's the Jesus we hold to. That's the Jesus worth trusting in for now. Imagine standing before Christ at the end of days, and He says, how did you trust in me through your life? And the only answer we have is, well, I trusted in you for life after death. And He goes, well, that's part of it, but what about all of the life that you lived in the meantime? Did you trust in me for that? I think largely in my experience, the answer of most Christians is, but I didn't know how. I knew you would be enough, but I didn't know how when I was right in the thick of it. We need to know how. We need to know what trust in Jesus in the now looks like. Because then we can lead people into that. We can welcome them into that. We want to be able to have both. Trust in Jesus for the now, trust in Jesus for eternity. Because He is trustworthy. Because He is the promise fulfilled. He's our hope for today. And everything we need for tomorrow. So, trust is what we mean by belief. A trust that we rely on Jesus day in, day out, every moment, every morning, every night. That He's our only source of life. All other good things come from Him and He functions through. Now let's begin to turn our hearts now towards the table where we meet with Jesus and receive from Jesus, where we push ourselves to move from I understand it to I receive it. Now let's stand together and let's sing as we prepare our hearts to meet Him there.